What does Australia's next generation of young leaders have to say about the future of India-Australia relations in a post-COVID world? And how do Indian scholars, scientists, practitioners, and students factor in? You're listening to Shared Visions, the podcast that spotlights the Australian government's new Colombo plan and gets to the heart of these questions. Today, we speak with Abdullahi Ahmed, a student of law from Victoria University, and Siddharth Patnaik, a student of law from the National Law University in Odisha.
So, hi, Abdullah. It's been a long time since I last talked to you. Anyway, so yeah, my name is Siddharth Patnaik. I'm a student, a third year student at National Law University, Odisha. I'm pursuing my BBA LLB degree right now. And I met Abdullah 2 years back when he visited our campus on behalf of a student exchange program. And yeah, he was there for like a week, I guess. And we had a lot of programs lined up for the exchange students. We had a lot of panel discussions, deliberations. We had campus tours. And yeah, all in all, we got to know each other, our cultures, the student work culture in both the countries a little better. So yeah, that's from my side. That's my introduction.
And my name is Abdullahi Ahmed. I've just graduated from Victoria University with a Bachelor of Law. I'm currently starting my graduate diploma in legal practice at the College of Law. I went to India with a group from Victoria University in early 2019, where we visited both Centurion University and the National Law University of Odisha. Most of our time was at Centurion, but we spent about 4 or 5 days at the National Law University of India. However, the program was a law and justice program in India, and it was led by Centurion University. But because Centurion University is not a law school, we went to National Law University to meet with other law students and go to that part, because I believe the National Law University was in Parakamandi, whereas the Centurion was at Bhubaneswar, if I'm not wrong.
I think you're right about that, yeah.
I'd like to correct Abdullah here. So he's right about the Centurion University, but the Law University is in Cuttack, not Paralikmundi. Paralikmundi is the program that you were sent by the Centurion University for the tribal rights program.
Yes, okay. Yeah, okay. I think you're right. We were actually able to go see the courts.
Child
Welfare Center in Cuttack.
Okay. So you kind of got like a first-hand experience of, you know, seeing the Indian legal system in action.
Yep, in Cuttack.
Okay. What was that experience like?
Was very interesting, actually. It was very interesting. So the day, I think we was unfortunate, but the day we actually went to the court system, the lawyers were on strike.
So, oh, okay.
So do you know why? The reason was, I believe, they were after new lawyers being given a set amount of money to be paid monthly.
Okay.
I think, so the lawyers were on strike, but the judges were in the court and we were able to sit down with the judges that day. They had a lot of time because they were not hearing matters. So it was very interesting. We sat with, I think, the chief magistrate of Odisha that day. We had a session on law and justice in India.
But you kind of caught them at like downtime. So you got to like...
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing. Yeah. If there was court, we would probably have just watched the court proceeding and that was it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've personally experienced a few court proceedings in India, mostly in Mumbai, but the Mumbai High Court is notorious for being one of the slowest and one of the most like backlogged, legal system processes in the country. But I'd imagine, I don't know what it's like in Cuttack. Maybe it's a bit smoother. I'm not actually sure. Maybe Siddharth would know more to that effect.
Yeah, right. So they, in fact, visited the High Court of Odisha, which is in Cuttack. And from my personal experience, I'd say it's rather not a fast-paced court, but it's not slow as well. Things go as they do, right? They take their they take their time, they take their pace. But yeah, I think the functioning is pretty smooth here, around here. There's not a lot of disturbances that go through. Yeah, apart from that particular incident that Abdullah talked about. But then, yeah, I think all in all, it's a very smooth functioning of the codes around here.
That's good to hear. So do you, Siddharth, your goal kind of is to be what, like a practicing lawyer in Orissa?
Not really. Right. So
yeah,
I have not really thought about staying back in. So I was brought up in Orissa. I belong to Cuttack. I have stayed here my whole life. And I do not really intend to stay here and practice for the rest of my life. I actually interned at the High Courts of Delhi, the High Court of Delhi and different district courts of Delhi. Yeah. I even got a chance to visit the Supreme Court of India. And, you know, so seeing places like that, they ignite something inside you. They motivate you to, you know, work further to, you know, compete with the best in the business and be amongst the best legal minds of India. So I definitely want to, you know, practice somewhere that there is more competition in. So yeah, I like to widen my, you know, preferences and go around the country and establish a legal practice.
So as someone who is, you know, a student of law and also an aspiring, like, lawyer in India, how do you feel when you watch the news recently and when like certain things about the Indian law or legislation come, they've been more present in the news of late, right? Like for example, the recent piece of news, which was that the laws surrounding censorship would become highly extended into OTT entertainment or like on-demand entertainment, so anything like Netflix or Prime. Abdullahi, if you're not aware, but in India, this was recently announced that there would be much stricter censorship and basically a much stricter look at all the content that becomes on demand in India, as well as the films which were already getting censored. But yeah, this is just one example of something I've seen recently. But, you know, as someone would be able to tell you who analyzes, you know, legal processes in India, it's not exactly the most efficient place, at least like in places like Mumbai, from my experience. Like sometimes, you know, the inefficiency of the legal system is something that really turns people away from seeking legal help. So I'm just wondering what the both of you feel about, you know, being a practicing lawyer in India. Like what kind of you know, what does the task look like for, you know, if I wanted to be a lawyer in India to kind of go up against a system like that?
Right. So in my opinion, the problem essentially is not the system, but when the system is established, right? So most of the laws that we have in our country right now are imperial in nature. Like they are laws from the British era, right? And with the developments, with the advancements in technology and the society, there are a lot of things that have happened that the lawmakers did not anticipate to happen in the future, right? Let's say, for example, I'd say forensic evidences per se, for example. So the Indian Evidence Act still does not take into effect a lot of forensic evidences but the reason behind that is the limitations of the statutory laws that are there right now in India. So I think there is an imminent need of reform in the Indian legal system and the laws that are present right now in the country, and we need to become more adaptable to the changes around the society, to the changes that are being implemented, the changes that we are seeing happening. So that's what I think. I think it's not the execution of the law, because we are pretty much following what is written in the law right now. But it's what is written. The problem is what is written. So we need to, you know, get a better perspective on that. So yeah,
We need some reform as well.
Right. Yeah, mostly reform.
Yeah. When things about the law pop up in the news, that's the only time that I hear about what's going on. And in India, it's pretty common. I mean, maybe it's the news that I read or something, but you often will read about
some kind of regressive thing that has just suddenly made a comeback, like the censorship thing, which is a huge topic of discussion in India right now, because the Indian Film Board already has a very strong hand in censoring films that go to theaters. And now that seems to be extending into the streaming world. So it's kind of like this huge discussion that's, you know, we're in the middle of right now in India. But I want to turn a little bit of a focus to your experience when you were in India and when you got a chance to, you know, see all these legal processes up close. You got to spend some time with, you know, the lawyers and the court magistrates. And, you know, now you're back in Australia and you're getting ready to get a graduate degree. And if you could just tell me a little bit about what your experiences in India, like what, you know, they taught you as a legal practitioner, you know, what kind of things you took away that maybe have informed, you know, your work going forward.
Thank you so much for your question. I think what I took away was that the Indian legal system is really embracing technology. And this is something that back home is something very common, something that happens every day that you take for granted. You don't appreciate how, even with COVID-19, how our courts are still going on through Zoom and stuff like that. And WebEx, but in India, it was very amazing to see how they were embracing technology and trying to move from paper to try to digitalize the courtrooms, which was very interesting. And these are things that back home we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the major things that reduce the backlog in courts. In Australia, where you might finalize a matter might go through the tribunal, go to the federal court, and then go for appeal and be heard for appeal again in a period of 1 year. This is very amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is through the rise of technology.
Right. So in what ways were you seeing like digital technology being slowly incorporated into the Indian courtroom?
These are the things that the judges told us. They said that they're digitalizing the courtrooms. They're putting cases online, and
okay, they're just digitizing like past cases, exactly. And files.
Because
and
we went into the records room where they had cases from about I think the early 1900s. So a case from 1903, which is still open in court.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like the Indian legal system. Yeah, not surprised about that. But I didn't know that in Australia that the matters were being held over Zoom. How does that happen smoothly? It sounds like there would be a lot of issues to do that without a hitch.
Well, I don't think. I think it's been going very well. I think I haven't heard of many big complaints. And I think at the start, in the first few weeks, there might have been glitches here and there. But people are getting used to it. People are embracing it. Like there are lawyers, there are all the lawyers who haven't embraced technology as much, who are trying to catch up, and the times are forcing us to.
Mm-hmm. Right. And tell me a little bit more about the thing that Siddharth mentioned, that you were sent on a field trip to look at, it was a tribal law project, did you mention? Tribal rights?
He's talking about, we met the tribal leader, I believe.
Yeah, right. So we were not there with you on that field trip, but I guess you were sent to Palekmundi, which is a tribal area in Odisha. So I'm pretty sure that would have been
Well, we met a priest who they had a very informal kind of legal system.
Okay.
So if a dispute could not be resolved, so all disputes were resolved by the priest in the community or the reverend. And
like a panchayat.
Yes,
like
exactly. A panchayat, a village court. Okay. That's a word. Okay. So if they were telling us about how if an issue was not dealt with or could not be resolved by the pastor or preacher, who was the panchayat village court, if they couldn't reach an amicable solution, was not attained, and the parties would involve the police and follow the modern 21st century path to law and justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, especially in a lot of remote areas, it's actually proved to be a pretty effective system
for
a lot of remote villages in India where, I mean, first of all, there's already an inherent mistrust of cops. But on top of that, because of the lack of access, it's a multi-generational system that the baton, as it were, it gets passed on from generation to generation. So it's actually turned out to be pretty effective. I wanted to take a look at what the both of you wrote back to us about kind of COVID-19 and how that's kind of changed your work as individuals, but also the opportunities that exist for collaboration between India and Australia. And, you know, this is something that's relevant to almost every professional field at the moment, especially given the new strategic cooperation agreements that are happening between both the countries. So I guess as lawyers, I would love to hear your guys' insight into, you know, what you think, what kind of possibilities exist in this area. I know, Siddharth, you wrote to us and said that, you know, maritime law perhaps is something where India and Australia, there's some potential collaboration there. So, yeah, maybe if you wanted to expand on that and just give me your thoughts, that'd be great.
See, very big opportunity in maritime because in the Indo-Pacific area, in the Indo-Pacific region, India and Australia are the major maritime players in this country, in this Indo-Pacific area, right? So apart from that, I'd like to point out something. So Australia has a lot of trade with Seoul, Shanghai, Tokyo, and countries like that. But if you see, if you observe, the coast of Chennai is more closer to Perth than the coast of Perth to Seoul or Shanghai or Tokyo. So there are a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of a scope for improvement for us to get into the maritime law, to get into naval exercises, to strengthen our navies, to strengthen our maritime laws, shipment laws, the overall trade in between the two countries. So apart from that, if we remember about the Malabar naval exercise, that is a multilateral naval exercise between India and US and Japan. So Australia was a part of that naval exercise until 2007, I guess, when they pulled back from the exercise because of some other international objections by some other country, right? So, after that, we have a naval exercise with Australia, that a different naval exercise, that's a bilateral Indian-Australian naval exercise. But there's scope for more. My only point is the scope for more. I gave you the example of the proximity of Chennai to Perth, and then the other naval exercises that we can indulge in. So yeah, I think this is a field that India and Australia can both benefit from, and I think we should, you know, look out for more opportunities in these fields. So yeah, I want to hear what Abdullah has to say about this.
I actually agree with you. So let me just go back a bit. So looking at the new Colombo plan, this is a plan where Australia is trying to equip us their students with a level of education and knowledge so that we can contribute to the economy or to in demand fields in other countries in the Indo-Pacific region like India. The program is targeting both the next generation of Australian leaders as well as encouraging all Australian undergraduates to experience and learn about regions. So it's a transformative program and the practical demonstration of Australia's commitment to learn from our neighbours, just as we know students from other regions benefit from their experiences in Australia. Fun fact, in over 97,000 Indian students enrolled in Australian universities, this is a report from 2008. So Australia and India are both English colonies. Like, we share a few things. We share cricket, we share English. You know, these are things that bring us together. So recently we're sharing more important things such as political, economical, and security. As Siddharth said, there are considerable opportunities for defense and security cooperation between India and Australia. Potential areas such as maritime security include in naval exercises and training, such as the use of the Australian Submarine Escape Training Facility in Fremantle, greater cooperation in humanitarian and disaster relief operations and search and rescue, maritime border protection and maritime domain awareness. There are also opportunities for greater cooperation between the Indian and Australian armies and air forces, you know, through reflecting the greater use of shared platforms. I also want to add that still, free trade between Australia and India has still not been achieved. India has been pushing for, but Australia has still not budged on loosening of the 457 visa, which if a few of these things were changed, we would have...
We would be able to exchange more resources as far as trade and business goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I have thought about is that, you know, one thing other people I've spoken to as for this podcast have mentioned is that, you know, the fact that low cost manufacturing in India is such a readily available resource, and that, you know, it's like a matter of time before there's a lot of, you know, the trade regulations especially are loosened, because that's just something that Australia and India will naturally end up working together towards, in that Australian companies will definitely set up hubs in India where they'll be seeking talent in this country, because they already know, like you mentioned, there's thousands of Indian students in Australia already. So I think both governments are already aware of the talent pool. Absolutely. That's there.
And Australia's second biggest export is education. But also look at this. Australia is about one of the biggest countries in the world with only 27 million in population. You know, imagine tapping into a resource of 1.3 billion people. What could be achieved would be amazing.
Yeah, and I guess it's sending students is like it's the first step towards building that relationship.
Exactly, there is a relationship. Yes.
Definitely. Right. So, go ahead.
Just to add to what both of you mentioned, I totally agree with Abdullah. There are a lot of commonalities between India and Australia. Both of us are a very strong, vibrant, secular, and a multicultural democracy, right? Regarding the economic opportunities that we both possess as countries for trade, I think there was a proposed plan known as the Comprehensive Economic Cooperation Agreement, which was talked about a lot before a few years, but it still hasn't passed as a bill. But then, yeah, that would have... made it very easy for both the countries to trade between commodities, such as we could have imported a lot of... Australia is one of the major producers of wool, Australia and New Zealand. Both the countries are major producers of wool in the entire of world. So we could have relied on them. We can rely on them for our textile industry. They can rely on us for certain commodities. And yeah, that's about it. And I think Australia would be looking to increase the trade relations with India and decrease their dependency on China, because China, being an autocratic country, not being a democracy, could pose some problems in the future. So yeah, I think it's better for us. It's better for both the countries to indulge in free trade and the commerce opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess... Just to wrap, I would love to hear from you as to, you know, this podcast is about the NCP program. We're talking to alumni, but most importantly, I think what I'm trying to understand is how the experience has helped NCP graduates today, and, like, you know, even though if it's been 3 months or 3 years since the experience.
So this program introduced me to a different culture, the Indian culture, and although the Indian culture is big and broad and diverse, and there's so many different cultures within Indian people, the different traditions, the legal environment. Many of my colleagues were very happy and fascinated with the experience. You know, they really enjoyed their time in India, the culture with the Indo-Pacific region, and this was a chance for us to self-reflect. As a law student in Australia, a study tour in India, like mine wasn't a year-long program, it was just 3 weeks in India, I believe still gives me an edge to get a great job, because it adds an I'm a law degree. I'm a law student. I'm not an international relations student. But this part of my degree gives me an international dimension to my law degree. India is the fourth largest economy in the world with a population of 1.3 billion people. Whether I like it or not, India is rapidly moving to become one of the world's leading powers. And, you know, with my time in India in my resume, I think it really gives me an edge.